Hello, everyone. Sifu Sylvain Chamberlain here again with you. Thanks for watching, tuning in. As you may know from my posting on Facebook, I've spent a couple of weeks working on the hydronic water heater furnace for the Kuhn. Hand built it using what little money I have. And it's working really good. But I've been remiss in posting my weekly videos. So today I'm going to record two of them, two different subjects. These are going to be a little bit shorter. I promise. And I want to cover a couple of topics. One that I've talked at length about, but I've synopsized in a much easier to understand way, so that if you haven't listened to all my other videos about how the mind works, what we're trying to accomplish with Buddhism, I've really boiled it down here. So this document should give you a good solid basis for understanding what we're trying to accomplish with Buddhist practice, and hopefully will pique your interest about a couple of terms and ideas I'll throw in here that will then lead you to the other videos so you can get more in-depth knowledge if you need it, if you want it. Once again, there can be no Buddhism without study and practice. And then I want to talk a little bit about the beads. But since I already opened up about the monkeys, I posted and I do this every week. I do my research. I delve back into these subjects, even though I've been studying this almost 30 years. Whenever I'm going to talk about something, I go back to reference materials, the different sutras, the books of scholarship that I have, translations, even website sources from universities and things, I'm going to sneeze, that are, let's see if I can keep that sneeze from arising. Anyway, I research all my material and then I rewrite it again because we're always evolving. Even if I talked about something last year, I want to see how I construct what I've learned in words, so that I can transmit them to you with hopefully less and less confusion or misspoken words. You know, words have mutable meanings. And I want to make the teaching really, really clear. If you've studied Buddhism at all, you know that it can really get your mind lulled into a big repetition of terms and understanding so many Sanskrit words and Pali words and so on and so forth that you can get lost just trying to navigate the text. So what I'm trying to do with the contemporary Buddhist mind is say, look, this is what he's saying. And I'll spurt in a little Sanskrit and Buddhist terminology, but I'll place it within a context that you go, I get what that means. That's what I'm trying to do, okay? So, enough with the blah, blah, blah. Let's get right into it. I posted this, I began to say, on the website, threefoldlotus.com. You can go to threefoldlotus.com/home/home.htm. No L at the end, just HTM. And so it's home twice. threefoldlotus.com/home/home.htm. That's the home page of the resource portion of the website. And if you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see there's just a ton of buttons with subject matter as their name. And you'll see one called Why is the Land of Monkeys? Or Why the Land of Monkeys? Or Why Land of Monkeys? I don't know how much room I had on the button, but anyway. And you can pull up a PDF of this document that I'm going to read from today. and print it out for your own study or reference whenever. Maybe you're talking to somebody else about Buddhism. You go, no, that's not right. Let me go get that document. This is how Sifu Chamberlain describes it, and that's good. That's that. I want you to do that. That's good for you and others, because we need to clear up a lot of the confusion that exists from earlier teachings that are incomplete. Really, if you want to know Buddhism, you have to study the entire output of the Buddhist teachings over his almost 60 years of teaching. It's very prolific, but he had to take people through certain learning stages in order to get them to understand conceptually what he was trying to get them to understand. I'm not even going to waste time trying to make an analogy for that. Let me just read this. Why, in quotes, is the land of monkeys? Those of you familiar with my discussions on Buddhism, and more specifically the teachings on the awakening of the Buddha mind, will also know of my frequent use of the Buddha's analogy of our manovijnana, or human mind, as the land of thousands of monkeys. Monkeys all, these monkeys are constantly jumping, hanging, swinging from branch to branch as they all shout incessantly for our attention and devotion to our slash their cravings. These cravings, desires, avarice, emotions, fears, longings that we experience in daily life are all the function of these monkeys distracting us or being extremely clever in the task of only one thing. I'm sorry, I'm moving the camera there. Don't want to make you dizzy. I'm filming this in my home today instead of the kuna. I apologize. It's raining outside, and I just decided to stay here and talk to you. So these monkeys, the monkey mind, they have only one task in their entire existence, and that is to make absolute our perception of self and others. To keep this dichotomy intact is the very survival of the monkeys. The Buddha realized that it was these monkeys that provided the essential dissolution from reality that plunges all life, sentient beings specifically, into suffering. Endless cravings for identity as separate from the natural order of life process is the fundamental delusion that provides for all manner of suffering, fear, cravings, and the insatiable I, or me, or mine. The idea that there's something other than you. I know that sounds confusing at first if you've never talked about Buddhism or researched how it works and why we do it. Almost everybody has this. From birth, we come out of the womb and we look at all this stuff around us and we immediately set about identifying who we are versus what all that other stuff is. That's the dichotomy, self and other, whether it's thought or physical or whatever. The idea that there's a duality is the problem. And that duality is because our human ego mind, that land of the monkeys, is in the way of our true mind, our true knowing, our Buddha mind experiencing the world. And these monkeys are trying to, with all of our karma that you can research in other videos, those chains of causation want to identify a self. Okay, let me go on. You can see this predicament very early in child development. We laugh at it without understanding the fundamental problem at work. It is the continuous question of 2 to 4 year olds of why? Why, daddy? Why is this, why is it blue? Why is it dangerous to do this? Why is that, why is water wet? Why is the sky, on and on. Why? Right? We laugh about it all the time. A litany of monkey quotes immediately spill from our mouths. Is it they're on it, man. The why. Oh yeah, this is our territory, the why. Because that's where emotions get tied to things. And this is how Apple sells computers. Emotions are really big with Apple. Because then you do things without really thoughtful exploration. You just react. That's a monkey, right? So, all that litany that just pours out of our mouth to satisfy the child, we think we're more clever than the child. Well, we're playing the same game, and the game we're playing is that why must be. That the why, in fact, is irrelevant to anything. In fact, it only leads to more questions of impulse that are once again the actions of the monkey mind. This becomes a circular rhetorical device that ends in exhaustion of suppositions as the monkeys grow weary and tired, as is their provenance. What parent hasn't experienced that final, because I said so, now go play? You just don't want to do it anymore. And the child, gets sad because it felt your disdain, but the moment it turns around doing something else, it's not getting why you're so obsessed with the why. It's just having fun playing with getting attention from mom and dad. But we take it really serious, right? Okay. The how would be a much more productive endeavor, as this question deals with causation. This pattern of questioning attempts to reveal the structure of phenomena and thereby the possible patterns of actions leading to a phenomenon. This exercise can lead to useful insights and recognition of karmic tendencies so as to be better disassembled when we're in meditation. This can also be a trap, though, because it's easy for us to forget that the objective in meditation, and I can't make this point strongly enough, the objective in meditation is to quell the formations of the body, or another word for body, the causal chains that manifest the monkeys, etc. So, to prevent their recurrence and not to understand and embrace them. So much misinformation on meditation from all, not just Buddhism, from Hinduism, from yoga, Kara, and there are people that know, but most of the spread of meditation, TM, all of that, works to observe the breath. We all start there. Then we observe the thought. And then we have all this new agey talk about embrace the thought, let it be, love it, allow it. That's not the objective. Straight from Buddha's mouth, that's not the objective. The objective is to cease it. And it's not to cease the thought, not even that. If you're thinking about the thought, you miss the whole point. You're not meditating. You're just calmly relaxed into celebrating what you're doing, calmly relaxing. And there may be some benefit to that to calm you down and stuff, but I guarantee you, you walk outside and somebody steps on your foot and your calm's gone. Okay? Because it's all monkey. It's a very clever monkey going, aren't we great? Isn't this identity of me-ness chanting or meditating to be so at peace? I'm so wonderful. I'm reaching better. I'm reaching it. You're still I. You're still me. You're still mine. You haven't left yet. You've missed the whole point. Ceasing the formations of the thought. So the first thing that should make you happy happen when you recognize a thought arising, because it wasn't there a second ago, but in this moment a thought arises, go, oh, I see you. Now I don't want to pay attention to you anymore. What I'm curious about is, where'd you arise from? How'd that happen? Where'd you come from? And that may be very, very abstract, I grant you. But if you direct your mind to go to not paying attention to the thought, but trying to see where it came from, you've already released the thought. You see? And where you're focused is much more interesting because you will get glimpses. The more you do this, the more you'll start to see, not with your human mind, I think that thought was that must have come from the. No, don't do that. Just be in that flickering light of your eyelids down and focus on your Buddha mind, which is deeper than all of this phenomena. There is no differentiation in the real world. In reality, there is no self and other. There is no permanence. Everything is a fleeting construct within the life body, the life process. And we're just a little bump in time, and the time itself is an abstraction of our mind. Don't get too wrapped up in the terminology. Just look beneath. Now, that's hard to do without all of Buddha's teachings because what you'll learn as I read on here, the most important thing you should get right now is that you shouldn't be thinking about the thought, period. Not where it came from or anything. You're just trying to see beneath it. And I'll get back to this in a minute. In fact, we don't want to focus our attention on the thought at all, but rather to see beneath it to what holds it up. What did it arise from? What constructs its formation? So that, like the monkey analogy, let's go back to that, we can see the branch. And if we can visualize, maybe even just visualizing a branch under that thought, a stick, we can make it cease to be. We can say, well, something in that area is holding you up. I feel it. Maybe it's a feeling in my gut, an organ. Maybe it's just a change in the light in my eye. I mean, whatever. Whatever precedes that thought, go back to it and then quell it. Actually tell it in your mind. You can go now. You can cease to exist. You can cease to form. You can cease your activity. And then further, we can go and perceive the tree that holds the branch or a thicker branch and quell it also into non-existent. And then the ground in which the tree manifests and ceased its constant rebirth from moment to moment until it too ceases to arise in the mind. This is the core of proper meditation in Buddhism. It's not to have any kind of relationship with the thoughts that come to mind because it's already manifest. It's too late. Where we need to be looking is the construct behind the formation of those thoughts and the formation of the formations of those thoughts and how they come, the causal chains. And see, I'm not talking about all of that in here, but this is what you're going to end up researching because you're going to, well, what holds a thought up? Where does that come from? This is why Buddhism is study until you get to that nth point where you go, oh, wow, that's a lot of information. But once you have it, you don't have to recite it all in your brain. Once you've learned it all, what you gained mentally is an understanding of the tremendous complexity of building upon building, of desire upon will, upon volition, for something to instantiate and then be. What we're trying to do is get ahead of the being to what is constructing the being. And if we can quell that construction, that construct, what we're doing is we're taming the monkeys. We're telling them we don't need them. Just go eat a banana. You don't need to be here. You're unnecessary at this point. Okay? Rhetoric is important here. This is the entirety of the teachings of Buddhism. That is, to understand deeply the formations of all phenomena. It is only in the teachings of the last 8 years of the Buddha's lifetime that a complete picture of practice would come full circle to what he was trying to explain in the first 21 days after his own awakening. And it was only with the ensuing elucidations of Nagarjuna in the first century, Vasubandhu in the fourth, Tendai in the sixth, and finally with Nichiren in the 13th century, that all the pieces of the puzzle were in place but only required popular understanding. Understanding impermanence, anatman, the five aggregates, the nidana, causal chains, the three existences, and the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. All teachings of the massive forces leading to becoming. And then the 10 worlds in mutual possession, the 10 factors, all aspects of instantiation and manifestation of the great energies of the life process, bringing all phenomena into physical duality experience, ultimately revealed in the Lotus Sutra. Now it can be observed that the Buddhist teachings are entirely designed to give us the tools, the mind tools, to fundamentally understand how, not why, to use our human minds to deconstruct the vastly complex functioning of our human ego mind from the simple analogy of the monkeys jumping from branch to branch to looking beneath their supports, to the calming or quelling of the formation of those bodies or phenomena, we are made deeply aware of the structures of how all phenomena, physical, emotional, or imagined, come to exist or arise in our human minds. To quell the formation of all phenomena is to release the mind from the monkeys. And if the monkeys are silenced, then the causal chains of the alaya consciousness go dormant. And without the avarice of these causal chains, karma, our human minds are free to experience life without influence, prejudice, judgment, or fears. This is liberation of suffering and the stated goal of Buddha. Does that make sense? That's 22 minutes. And you just learned all of Buddhism. Now you just got to make it work. But I think it's important as a reminder every now and again, we slog through a lot of information, a lot of reading. And I assure you, that's all I do. And you even have to slog through my condensations and modern language about it. But they're tools. They're tools just like the math you didn't want to learn in school. And even though you don't like to admit it, you use it every day, every time you count out change or you make sure you got enough change back from a purchase or so on and so forth. How much gas is there, what, so on. So it's important. It's important not to just read partially the teachings of Buddha. It's important because he taught to the people's time and capacity, and he knew, as he taught the Mahayana teachings, the later teachings, that it wouldn't be until 2,500 years after he passed away that people would have the capacity to really understand what he was saying. Amazing. Amazing that he had that kind of perception. Why? Because he had no monkeys in his way. He was enlightened. He was awakened. The monkeys just left. We don't need to be here. So he was left with total clarity. As we also can do, because we have the Buddha in us. We are the Buddha. The only thing keeping us from experiencing the Buddha in us, of us, through us, are the monkeys that we carry around. That's what meditation's for. Not to feel relaxed, not to feel healthy, all those benefits will come if you do the meditation correctly to reach your quiescent Buddha mind. And yes, It can be done in this lifetime. You don't have to wait to die. There's no timetable on this. There's only effort. How much effort you put in, that much benefit you get. It can come all at once. Pretty rare. We live in our age today, in such a diluted age, with unimaginable influence, constantly distractions, constantly. The monkeys are freaking running the asylum. They are reigning free and crazy. So yeah, you have to make time for this, and you have to really make the effort. And believe you me, every time you read something that's of merit and helps you understand this more deeply, your mind will shift. You'll feel it physically. So I encourage you to give it a shot. Really give it a shot. Chant every morning and evening. Read the Gosho. Read the Lotus Sutra, and go from there. Let your mind wander from there. But start there, and give it a good 3 months, like you would a class in university. It's free. 3 months out of your life. How much time have you spent learning things that are completely useless to you now? Give it 3 solid months of day and night. Just a little bit of reading, some chanting. Hell, you can download Gohunzons all over the internet. Download from my site. And see if it doesn't change you wildly as a person. The insights you'll gain, the way you'll be able to settle arguments and not feel so impinged upon. Things won't affect you anymore, certain things. It doesn't come all at once, but little by little, you see chunks changing in yourself, and you're like, wow, this is amazing. That's called proof. There's no mysticism here. It's not magic. It's just a tool to help your mind perceive more correctly what's happening, how it's happening. Okay? So enough on that. Thanks for sticking around. I always appreciate the comments that I get. Sometimes they're just views, but I like that you're out there, willing to listen. The more questions you ask, the better I'll feel. I mean, I know I explain things ad nauseum sometimes, but I can't be answering all your questions. You must be, or even challenge some of the things that I say. That will help me grow. So don't hesitate. I love you guys. I want you all to be blissfully happy. And help me get there too. Loom, that's my selfish monkey. All right, good day and success in all things. Bye bye now.